Welcome to episode 5 of Behind the Shield. My name is James Gearing. I will be your host. And my guest this evening is Julien Penaud. Now, Julien is self-described as a movement specialist. He's originally from France, has been an athlete himself his whole life. Started as an MMA fighter and then moved on to strongman competition. But then found a passion for fixing people. So became enthralled in movement. Founded his own company called StrongFit and began fixing broken athletes. That was kind of how I came across his work. I had just come off a back injury, had healed it using foundation training, but still felt that I had got weaker even though I'd been training more and more and more. Heard him on a podcast called Barbell Shrugged, and it just kind of blew my mind. From when you are taught the traditional way of thinking and someone comes in with a completely different way, it really did strike me as amazing. The big thing is the way he trains people is so pertinent for firefighters, police, EMS, because he focuses on moving weight over distance like strongmen do. So he uses a lot of sandbags, yokes, sleds, which totally replicates the tools that we use in our jobs, whether it's firefighters with ladders and hoses or dragging people or wrestling people to the ground. We don't do our work standing still with both feet planted. You know, we're in awkward positions and we have to carry a pretty substantial amount of weight and use a substantial amount of force to do our jobs. So you need something over and above the average level of training. So in this interview, we first talk about how I got him to train with me. It's quite a funny story. We go over methods versus principles, why CrossFitters get hurt and why they shouldn't, common muscle imbalances found in many, many people, people that are trained especially, that lead to injury, people that are in pain that really shouldn't be in pain, going to the pain cave, like finding your anaerobic threshold and pushing through, becoming mentally tough by using exercise, and then talking about barefoot again, about how I mentioned before, I kind of get laughed at the gym. But here's a 200 and God knows how many pounds bearded monster who also walks around his gym with no shoes, carrying ridiculous amounts of weights. So I am extremely excited to bring this guy to you. I think he is going to make a lot of people think very differently about how they train. It has not made me throw away all the training I did before, but it's really made me kind of reevaluate the way I train and certainly incorporate a lot of his movements into my training. As a firefighter, I've become a lot stronger, a lot more effective. As a fighter, I've become stronger as well, certainly in jiu-jitsu, where my grip strength and just kind of overall strength and power has certainly improved. And I think when you hear him talking about where these imbalances are, I know when I looked in the mirror and, you know, looked at my training and looked at where my strength had actually become to diminish, you self-examine and then you go, okay, yes, this guy absolutely has a point. So it's not some spiel trying to convince you to do X, Y, and Z. Actually, you'll hear in the interview, he's a humanist. He doesn't care about profit. He's not trying to get rich like so many of our guests that we have. They just have a message and they want people to get out of suffering. They want people to eat well, to train well, to love well. And they're not out to make a quick buck. And, you know, they should be wealthier than a lot of these people that are very rich, in my opinion, but they are more concerned about helping. So I am very excited to introduce this interview to you. And without further ado, here is Julien Penaud. So welcome to Behind the Shield. This episode, we have Julien Penaud joining us. Julien, thank you for calling in.
Oh, my pleasure. My pleasure. How you been?
Very well, thank you. Long time no see. I think the last time you saw me, I was crawling and spreading tears all over the Torrance parking lot.
Oh, good. I'm glad you remember. I wasn't sure. It was so bad, I didn't know if you blocked it out of your head or not.
No, I've still got the picture of you. Yeah, the classic Julian picture.
Yeah, I have it too.
So it's an interesting story how I ended up there, actually. I think I'd like to start with that before we delve into, you know, all your knowledge. I remember hearing you on one of the first podcasts I ever listened to, which was Barbell Shrug, the original crew. And I know they recently lost Chris Moore, and I was very, very sad to hear about that. Yeah. But your initial episode and then the two you did back to back really, really, you know, hit home with me. I'd been struggling with injury. I'd found one method that had worked very well, and I think I remember telling you about it. It was foundation training, Eric Goodman's work.
Yes.
But that translated well to a point, but there was definitely other elements that were missing. So I was dying to come over and spend a little time with you. And then you put out a request for a coffee mug. Do you remember that?
Yes, I do. It was the Son Goku Super Saiyan Transformation coffee mug. I remember. Heat activated.
Exactly. So if you put hot coffee in, it created a fireball. Is that right?
Yeah, exactly. Something like that.
So I managed to find it in one of those Chinese AliExpress type deals and send it over to you. And you sent me the invitation to come and train with you. So first question, do you still have the mug?
I do. Of course. I do. It's Dragon Ball Z, man. I still watch the movies and the shows and everything. I totally have the mug. The funny thing is my cousin bought the Vegeta one.
Oh, is that the other one that you were looking for?
No, because the thing was I put it online, right? Just as, oh, look, someone got me this. And then everybody went crazy on it, saying they wanted one. And my cousin loved it so much, he got the other one because I got Son Goku. So my cousin Cedric bought the Vegeta one.
That's hilarious.
So you started a trend, man.
Yeah, that was an expensive cut, though. I paid for that in blood, sweat, and tears.
Yes, you did. Yes, you did.
And the other question was, I remember using the bathroom and you had the squatty potty. You still use that?
Of course I do. Which actually, that's been a problem because we travel so much, most places don't have. So I have to come up with creative ways to elevate my feet.
Yeah. I have to say that was another epiphany in the world of health when I realigned my, realigned my butthole.
it makes a way bigger difference than people think.
Yeah, no, it really does. And when you think about, again, I mean, probably what we're going to be talking about anyway, which is
the proper evolution 101. Yeah,
squatting down when you do that and how it's supposed to be.
Principles, yeah.
Yes, exactly. Now, well, there you go. You just hit on the very first thing. So before we even delve into, you know, all the tools that you use and the way that you think, one of the most poignant things that you talk about that I think hits home for everyone, and obviously this is going to be steered towards a tactical athlete, and we'll talk about that, but your Emerson quote, principles versus methods.
Yes, and that's basically what drives my life, really, like everything I do. So he said, like, there is, you have to research the quote because he says it better than me every time I kind of mess it up a little bit on the grammar, but he said, like, there is but a million methods out there, but very few principles. A man who follows the principles can make up his own method, whereas a man who follows method without understanding the principles will always run into trouble. And that is such a true statement. And of course, he didn't talk about training at the time when he said that, but you can apply to training almost more than anything else, really. But to me, it touches as a core problem that we have in today's society. Like, for example, when did you hear about, you know, who was the last great philosopher? And look how long you have to go back. Like, so I think, and that's really what philosophy is going after the principles of thought and everything. And it seems we are at a phase in society where we are focusing on methods more than principles, which, you know, is not uncommon. Like, society goes through phases, but we definitely right now are focusing on methods too much. Like, you can tell, like, Einstein changed the world, you know, like about what, 80, 90 years ago. And since then we've been really working on applying his principles. And it's a little bit the same thing on a society level, is right now we are too focused on methods. And you see that with training a lot. And the problem with this is methods are, you know, they don't fit with everybody, obviously, always. And so a lot of people are falling into the cracks, and that is leading to many, many issues.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that's what I've seen in the short time I've been on this planet is it seems like a lot of trainers, a lot of equipment manufacturers are all trying to address an issue as if we're all made exactly the same. So, yeah. You know, one guy is going to be 5 feet and 200 pounds of pure muscle. Someone else is going to be 6.5 feet and morbidly obese. And these training tools don't all apply to every single person. One person might be super high and slow twitch. Another person may be extremely explosive. And I think that, like you said, that I love that about the methods is, and it's the same really as thinking about why you're doing it, is what is it that do you want to achieve at the end? And therefore, you know, how are you going to traverse that path and find your own individual way instead of trying to use, you know, a DVD or you know, a weightlifting method or whatever you've chosen to do something that is one size fits all.
Yeah, but the thing is, there are common patterns that evolution gave us. The problem is, as you were saying, is like everybody is driven mostly by trying to sell instead of sharing knowledge. Those programs are made to be sold. Equipment is made to be bought by people and everything. So everybody's trying to get to a volume of sale instead of a quality of knowledge. And so they are being driven by finding a way that fits for most people without caring for the few that don't fit in that mold. And so some people will get results out of it and a lot will not. And for the ones that don't fit in that particular mold, it sucks. I mean, and so what I want is I want for people to understand the common ground on which they can, you know, base their decision. Like I had a discussion this morning with someone who was talking about function, like the function of the human body. And he was starting to quote rugby, saying like, well, yeah, but for rugby, the function is it, the function is that. I was like, no, dude, rugby is not a function. It's a specialization. It's a method. It's something you want to do. Your body doesn't care that you do rugby. The function of the body is to obey its biology. It's a hormesis and homeostasis, you know, like the favorable response to stress on one side and balancing on the other. That's the function of the human body. That's, you know, it regulates everything through those two biological functions. Playing rugby is not a function, right? It's just a method, just a specialization. So if you look at training only from the side of doing rugby, that means you're going to only do the movements that will help you on the field. Then you're going to lack a certain foundation because you never truly looked at what evolution gave you in the first place. And so it's that mindset all the time of looking at what you want to do as the end game instead of looking at what evolution gave you and going from there. So there is a certain common ground where we can all start. The problem is that starting point is way towards specialization instead of starting at the basic human function.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that's what we're seeing as well in a lot of the gyms. And I've heard you talk about it and I've said the same thing to my fellow trainers in our gym. Is that why again? So in my field, obviously, you know, the why is, you know, one of the reasons that people are going to be training is to be better at our job. So if you're a fireman, obviously you've got a lot of physical tasks. You're going from 0 to 100. You're going to be striking. You're going to be dragging. You know, police officers are going to be chasing from a sitting position to a full sprint. And by doing certain movements, certainly if your programming is towards a kind of competitive CrossFit style genre, and I'm a CrossFit coach, and I do think that it has value, but there is a disconnect, and reprogramming why, you know, finding your why, I think is extremely important with your choices of exercises.
Oh yeah, the why is everything. And by the way, I'm all for CrossFit. Like that's the thing with me is I want to make CrossFit better. I don't want to replace it. I think CrossFit has done wonderful thing, and it has changed the way we train women forever. There is no question there. CrossFit has done more for women toward training and as a sport and even for self-image than any other activity has ever done. I think the problem is not CrossFit itself. I think the problem are the movements that are being used. Because if you look at CrossFit, the idea was high intensity functional movement done in a not necessarily random way, but constantly varied. It sounds like your job, really. You do... You know, like it's either the job of a fireman or of a cop. It's a highly functional movement, you know, a high intensity, which means you have to sprint, like you were saying, and constantly varied because you never know what you're going to face. So CrossFit, the principles of CrossFit, the idea behind it was So high intensity, highly functional. My problem with the way it is being done right now is, like, first of all, at high intensity is gone. Everybody's going after high volume instead of high intensity. And doing an hour Metcon is not going to help you chase a bad guy for 25 seconds, wrestle him to the ground. That's just not the same. You know, it doesn't work like that. And the second level is that functional movement. Functional movement to me means you are trying to mimic nature. Right, we are trying to duplicate what works in nature. A snatch does not count as one. The barbell does not count as one. Like, in everything that you do, as a fireman, as a cop, and everything what the humankind has been doing for the last 200,000 years, we have lifted everything that were in between our hands. That was the rule, because you had to grab it first, right? That means the center of gravity or whatever you're lifting was taking you toward, you know, the internal rotation, toward the torque, toward the inside. A barbell, the weight is outside of the hand. So mechanically speaking, it reverses the torque. So we go, instead of going toward internal rotation, we go toward external rotation. That alone changes the way you apply leverage. Therefore, changes the way we've been doing things for so long. To me, a barbell is not the best. I'm not against barbells, but that's not the most functional movement I can think of. Just by the mechanics of it alone, it reverses the way we've been doing things for a very, very long time. So, but if we look at the root of CrossFit, functional and high intensity, I'm all for that. My problem is the way it's being done right now does not follow the principles upon which CrossFit was created. So that's a little bit my problem as well. Is I think CrossFit we're talking about method, like CrossFit became a sport as well. And so instead of staying with certain principles, they started to evolve toward the sport. And the problem with the sport is it does not fit 90% of people. Not everybody can do an overhead squat. Not everybody should do an overhead squat. And they are being stuck into only one plane of movement, which is a sagittal plane, up and down, in order to deliver certain things at the CrossFit game. But this cannot be applied to the training of regular people or firemen or police officers or things like that. So to me, the problem is just the evolution of CrossFit went toward the CrossFit games instead of staying with that functional path, basically. And I think that's when we went wrong.
Absolutely. Yeah. What I found, because on my personal journey, it was very interesting. I got into it pretty early in 2008 when it was still, from someone not being involved in the California scene, it was, pretty early on. And early on, when I followed the main site, and it was really fun. You did your workouts and you literally competed with everyone around the world. You also submitted your comments, but it was like a 5 minute, pain cave type workout one day, about a 20 minute Metcon. Yes, exactly. And then the strength day, and then you cycled through. And when I was doing that, I found huge gains. I wasn't getting hurt. And then as the programming started to seem to veer towards the competitive side, as we got to 2011-ish, around then, 2010, 2011, I noticed, and I kind of had veered off a bit myself, I noticed that some of the raw strength that I developed early on and some of the musculature that I got had actually diminished. So when, I think that's what hit me so hard when I saw yours is, it wasn't just, I think what Julian's saying is right. I looked in the mirror and I'm like, where are my lats? Where is my ass? My glutes have disappeared. My lats have gone. And then there was a very pivotal moment where we did a fundraiser CrossFit / Fire competition. And there was a drag using a product that you'd actually love called the Fire Sled, made by one of my brothers here. And it was a hose drag, but there was weights on the sled and it was a piece of hose and you dragged it. And I couldn't drag it for love nor money. Yet I could do 30 pull-ups and, all the other movements. So yeah. So, I mean, the imbalances that you talk about, I mean, they're absolutely happening. I think not just in CrossFitters, but in a lot of people that do the weights routine. So could you elaborate on some of the main imbalances and how they manifest?
Yeah, so I call that balancing the box. I was talking about homeostasis. It's really like it's a quality of a system that seeks to gain and maintain balance, right? That's you're talking about body temperature, about pH level in the body, things like that. Like the body wants to get to wants homeostasis, so he wants a certain amount of balance. And if we look at the human body, and in that case, what interests us is human movement, right? So we have to define. First of all, we have to define human movement because it's a conversation nobody ever has. So First of all, what is movement? What are the components of movement? So a movement for a human is either a load, a carry, or a hold, right? Those are the three movements, really. You load as in like, you know, a push, pull, a squat, or a hinge. You can carry or you can hold, as in balancing things and stuff like that. So it's important to understand that the body is designed for all three, because that means you're going to need to do them in your programming. And then after that, you're going to take those movements in all planes of movement. So you have up and down, toward and away from you, left versus right, and then everything that is rotation based. It has to be taken through all energy systems and all types of contraction, because muscles are capable of eccentric, concentric, and isometric contractions. So if you look already at those four things, and you take, let's say, a training system like CrossFit, you will see right away the imbalances popping up. Everything in CrossFit is all loading. We don't carry things outside of the CrossFit games, obviously. We don't carry enough things. We don't hold. We don't work on balance enough, right? So already you get one out of the three that you work constantly, and you do not work on the other two. You neglect the other two, which is never a good idea, because right away, that means you're out of balance. If we look like your typical CrossFit programming for the planes of movement, you will notice that everything is up and down. That is 8% of movement in CrossFit is everything is up and down, mostly up, actually. So we don't do any more activation toward and away from you. Forget barbell rows, bench press, all that stuff. The left versus right is inexistent outside of lunges and pistols for the lower body. I can't imagine anything else. And for the upper body, we don't do one arm stuff, at least not enough. If you look at energy systems, CrossFit used to be pretty good at it, like you were saying. Like we used to do metcons, we used to do short. Whereas now, really, it's basically the same workout. It's 20-minute AMRAPs, 20-minute EMOMs, 20-minute metcon. You know what I mean? Like it's basically the same energy system. We don't have the very, very short ones. Whenever people want to do a 2-minute workout, they're going to do a 2-minute workout and then 6 workouts after that. So really what you're doing is 20 minutes of work just with rest times. So we're still not hitting that high, high intensity workout where you just do that for the day and you gear your body toward very, very short metcons. If you do a short metcons, wait 10 minutes, do another one, you're saving some in the tank for the next one. So you're not really working on that energy system. So the energy systems are getting a bit out of whack. And the contraction, we don't lower the weight in CrossFit because we try to go fast. So forget eccentric. Isometric, we don't hold anything. So forget isometric. So everything is concentric based. So that leads to a certain number of imbalances in the body. And then that over time, with the intensity, with the weights, with the volume that is being done in CrossFit, just starts to accumulate faulty movement patterns. And eventually you're going to pay the price for that. And so something I've seen so many times now is, for example, the lat. There's no more lat activation in CrossFit because everything is skipping. And so I've been telling everybody they need to go back and do lat pull downs because nobody can use their latissimus dorsi anymore. Go to your local CrossFit gym, ask people to do the wide lat thing that bodybuilders do all the time. You know, that frontal pose when they widen their lats. Ask people to do that. People cannot find their lats anymore. If you ask them to engage their lats, they retract their shoulder instead of protracting them. It's just, they just can't go do the wide lat anymore. So that means they use their upper back all the time, their traps, but not their lats. Problem is the second reason for the lats is to keep your shoulders down. So that means when you engage your traps and upper back and not your lats, you're going to shrug on every single thing. So you're going to engage the traps even more. And before you know it, your shoulders are jacked. And that's where we see so much shoulder problems within CrossFit. Is one of the big reasons is the lack of lat engagement. Give me one exercise in CrossFit right now that targets the latissimus dorsi. All the pull-ups are kept, and especially with a butterfly, is you have almost no tension now toward engaging the lats. And so that's turning into a real problem. That one is turning into a real problem. And I get that. And then you have the same thing with hammies, where hamstrings are not being used that much anymore. It's mostly quad dominant. For many reasons, but we don't have time to go into them. But we have the same problem with the hammies. So there's certain things like that that are starting to develop within the programming that, you know, within CrossFit right now with the programming the way it is, that I can tell you that from my side is starting to develop certain faulty patterns that are dangerous. So I see more and more people with messed up shoulders for the same basic reason every time of the lats, and then messed up lower back because they can't use their hammies. So instead of hinging and learning what a hinge is, they end up doing a flexion extension of the spine all the time. And of course, their erectors are blown up at every workout. They start to thicken, and they have very CrossFitters very thick erectors, but you don't want to do a flexion extension of the spine with heavy weights. You're supposed to hinge on a deadlift, not do a back extension. So that's leading, that also is leading toward a problem with the lower back. So now we have a lot of back spasm, a lot of neck spasm, and a lot of shoulder problem in CrossFit. I'm sure I've described 99% of people are going to listen to you.
Yeah. I mean, certainly you've got a lot of CrossFitters out there. The other group that we've got, I think, are everyone else. So the people that haven't been in that kind of gym environment yet. However, they're all going to be at least 18 plus, unless they're, you know, they're volunteering and they're young. But so these are people that have been in a chair for 2 decades, 3 decades, 4 decades. And that's another thing that I'm seeing a huge problem with. I mean, you say about the hinge. The hinge is a massive deal. People cannot squat and cannot hinge at the moment.
Yeah. And I mean, how many movement patterns do we have? We have four. And now, I mean, loading patterns. We have the push, the pull, the squat, and the hinge. That means can't squat, can't hinge. I mean, you're incapable of using your lower body. That means you're going to ask your spine to do every single thing. That sounds like a nightmare. Like, and on top of that, you're deconditioned. You're at the desk. That means you round your shoulders all day long. So that means you have no lats, no capacity for using your lower body. Yeah, that means you're just asking to have messed up back, basically. And in the short run, forget the long run. So it's all this is not working. And the problem is going to the CrossFit. CrossFit for me is what we need to go toward, because if we like the global gym with the machines are not teaching you how to move properly either. So it is a solution, but it's not the solution. What we need is, again, those functional movements. So we need to go back to the principles and teach people how to move correctly. And whether it's someone sitting at a desk or a CrossFitter or a fireman or a police officer, people need to move correctly. It took us 200,000 years to get to where we are. You're not going to change it in 40 years or 50 years just because the body is designed for certain things. We have to follow the guidelines. If you go against it, you apply the wrong leverage on joints and it's going to hurt. There's just no way around it. We need to teach people how to hinge, for example. Like otherwise, the back spasm will never go away. People spend so much money per year on back problems. It's absurd. And they go see PT or doctors that can only deal with trauma. So if you go see a PT before you actually have a traumatic vertebrae problem, it's going to take an MRI and see absolutely nothing because there is no trauma yet. What you have is basically the muscle improper movement pattern, which is forcing a certain muscle group to work against its own nature. And you end up with really, really bad back spasm. But because there's no trauma yet, the only thing a PT can do is stop you from doing it, make the muscle recover and send you back on your way. And guess what? Since you haven't changed the movement pattern, 6 weeks later, you're back at the PT doing the exact same thing. And this can go on for years until eventually you actually create real trauma on the spine. And now they talk about surgery. And you still haven't changed the movement pattern, which means you still go back to the same problem. And so that's what drives me insane in the industry right now.
Yeah, I had a conversation with one of my members just the other day who was almost in tears. And she was suffering from GERD. So it wasn't even a traumatic thing as much. But the first thing I asked her was, well, did your doctor talk to you about what you're eating? And she said no, she just prescribed medication. And I'm like, well, that sums it up. That's exactly the problem, whether it's a medical condition or a traumatic injury like a lot of us are seeing, is the information they're getting is incorrect. I grew up going through the quote-unquote Globo gym. I went through CrossFit in a good way. I got injured, hurt, learned a lot of things, flew to California, worked with you, worked with Eric, worked with some other people, did Ido Portal's classes and have really reprogrammed the way I think about movement. I think that's exactly it, the word movement. You said it, you hit the nail on the head. We're so busy thinking about exercise, working out, and that's not what the purpose is how am I going to move better? And by moving through space and carrying loads, like you said, that's how we learn to undo all the misinformation of the last few decades.
Yeah, and it's, again, we are following guidelines. Evolution gave us guidelines to follow. We cannot go against that. And so, yeah, as you were saying, like people are so focused on, I'm going to do this exercise because I want this. It's not, yeah, let's go. Wanting something is crazy, but let's go about what you need first. It's like, yeah, but that's where the industry is, just like that lady, they prescribe her medication. It's like, you know, those obese people that go do a stomach surgery. And I'm like, but you haven't dealt with the food issues that you have yet. That means, what makes you think you're going to stop eating like this just because you had surgery? And they go, well, I don't have a choice. Oh, no. And you know what? They say that, and then a year later, they're back to eating hamburgers and the stuff they were eating before that. So it's a little bit the same thing in the training industry. It's like the surgery is exactly like doing that stomach surgery, thinking, oh, now everything is okay. No, you're exactly in the same pattern as before. You're going to have the exact same problem coming back. And the system does not seem to care about that. It's always, it's a disease care instead of a healthcare system, basically. So they're just trying to fix problems as they show up, instead of trying to understand the root cause of the problem and only fix it once. And so you can either do it that way, or you do what is being done right now, which is fixing 26 times the same problem. And so that's been the battle for me, is to not give people exercises or methods, is to try to make them understand how to do it, right? It's Socrates who said, I cannot teach anybody anything. I can only make them think. And so that's really what I'm trying to do, is just trying to get people to understand what are the basics of movement, so they can teach themselves how to move correctly, or at least coaches to teach their people how to move correctly first, before you put them into a class system like a CrossFit or whatever it is that you want, and go from progress after that. First, we need to establish that foundation of movement. If we don't have that, we're in trouble. And now that the kids are moving less and less and less and going toward training later and later in life, it is more necessary than ever to teach a foundation for good movement, because we don't have those Chinese kids that have learned, you know, gymnastics at an early age, or the Russian kids that have been, you know, farming their whole life. We have kids and small adults, and fortunately older adults, that have never truly learned to move correctly. And so you add fitness to that and you have a disaster.
Absolutely. Yeah. And it's inexcusable. I think it sounds very, I don't know what the word would even be, but there's a phrase I heard a while ago, and there's no profit in healthy or dead people. It's keeping the sick ones alive that they're experts on. And that's really where we're at. I mean, they're just medicating people. I spoke to Joel Salatin, who's a well-known farmer, organic farmer.
Yes, and I've read his books.
Yeah, he's fantastic.
His books, yep.
Yeah, and we're pointing out the same kind of thing, is when you hear someone's on a blood pressure medication, you don't hear them in a few weeks say, okay, that worked, I'm off now, I'm off that medication. No, yeah, you're on it exactly for the rest of your life. So it's basically legalized, you know, drug pushing, really, if you think about it.
Well, it is. Like, look at the problem that we have with heroin in the United States right now. It is directly linked to painkiller medication, where at some point people take so much, it's too expensive, they can't afford it anymore, so they turn to heroin. This is happening in the Midwest and the rest of the United States right now. But that's been brewing for years and years and years, where people just were put on pain medication instead of learning to understand why they were in pain in the first place. We still don't have a conversation about pain and what pain truly is in this country, or actually in Western society. Instead, we just pump people full of drugs, and then we wonder why we turn them into drug addicts. It's the system right now is not good for human beings. It's good for the capitalism aspect of it, but when it comes to human beings, it is not working.
No, absolutely not. And I think one of the reasons why I was endeared to you is you always describe yourself as a humanist. And I think that's when change happens. If you're not trying to make a quick buck out of people, either through drugs or some exercise, you know, modality or piece of equipment, and you take a step back and you actually care just about people and wanting to fix them, I think that's when you get a very clear viewing, like, this is so, so simple. Eat this kind of food and move this way, and you won't be in pain, and you won't have these amazing diseases that we've manifested the last few decades.
Yes, and it takes people like coaches like us to, as you said, take a step back. Do not go for the 3 weeks program or the 6 weeks program. Do not think you're going to get rich in the first 2 years doing this, or ever probably, but it requires us to look at people and not at the system. It requires us to look at principles and not methods. If we want to teach that to our people, we have to be the first one to do it. We need to look at principles, at who are human beings, you know, what are they made of, how do they move and everything, and just go through that process. But if you do this in order to make money and, you know, like on a monthly basis and everything, you will not create change, right? And you create change by caring one person at a time. Like that's what I always done it is like, I want to change the world, but I'll do it one person at a time. I'm not interested in packaging what I do, in doing big methods, basically, that I can sell into a book. I'm interested in changing the world one person at a time, trying to fix one person at a time, making them think about their body differently and teaching them that way. And I think if there's enough of us doing this, we can create something. But as long as the fitness industry is only interested in 6 weeks block, lose 30 pound bullshit, we will have a problem. And same thing, whether it's food or exercise, it's all the same. Like it's, as you said, it's actually far simpler once you look at it with a different time frame in mind. If you look at it in a 6 weeks time frame, you're going to have problems. But if you look at it in a 2 years time frame, everything becomes so much easier.
Yeah, absolutely. And I've been touching back on what you were saying about the painkillers. I've been a fireman and paramedic for 12 years now, EMT paramedic. And the few generations before me, heroin was a big thing, but nearly all the deaths that I've seen on opiates have been the prescribed pain medication. Yep. And obviously there's only one reason why those are prescribed: pain either from poor diet or pain from, you know, trauma through muscle imbalance, really. So by fixing those two right there, you're getting to the root of the cause of a lot of drug addiction and abuse as well.
Well, there's no question. Like, I mean, don't get me wrong. Like, you get hit by a car, yeah, you should get painkillers. But if you need painkillers to go train because you have a problem that is gradually getting worse, now we have an issue. What's the definition of insanity by Einstein? It's doing the same thing over and over again, expecting a different result. If a problem is gradually getting worse, then obviously you're doing a movement pattern wrong, right? There is no reason for your body to just decay like that after every single workout. And so I look at it, and every time I'm like, but guys, does it sound normal? Like, your back, like, you, there's no MRI that don't show anything. You x-ray, nothing is broken. But like 6 months now, you're worse than you were 6 months ago, yet you keep doing things exactly the same way. And so now your way of getting out of that is just taking painkillers. It's circular logic. You're just killing yourself slowly. And I find that mind-boggling that the system is just jumping on painkillers like this. Like, we still are short of a true discussion on even what pain is. That alone, they just, so that push toward painkillers for me is to me is criminal. That it's actually the dirty secret in CrossFit. Like, everybody talks about steroids. There's not that much steroids in CrossFit. That's not the problem. The problem are the painkillers, especially the anti-inflammatories. Most CrossFitters that I know, at some point or another, were training on anti-inflammatories because the pain level was too high. And I was like, then maybe, just maybe, you're doing something wrong. Like, we need to stop looking toward those quick fixes and go toward a better approach.
Absolutely. And that kind of ties in nicely to another one of your principles that I absolutely love. Can you explain the key log to everyone?
Yeah, the key log that came out of something that I saw when I was a kid. It was I think it was a Discovery Channel documentary about the logging industry in Canada, where they were dropping the wooden logs in a river, and the river would take them down, obviously downstream to a mill where they would cut the wood. And once in a while, there would be a log jam that was created by you know, the logs getting stuck onto each other. And so they would call that one guy. He was actually an engineer. He looked to me like a magician at the time, but really was an engineer, who would come around and look at the entire structure, pick one log, remove that log, and everything would start flowing again. And that to me looked like magic, because if he picked the wrong log, nothing would happen, or log would get broken through the pressure. And so he would come and just pick the one that was created the entire jam, remove it, and things would start flowing again. And that to me, even as a kid, struck me as a fundamental thing for life. Basically, like, many times there's one log that is keeping the other 265 from flowing correctly. So you can try to remove all 265 logs one at a time, which will obviously would be excessively you know, would take a long time and be excessively expensive, or you can try to find that key log, that one log that is blocking all the other one. And if you can remove this, everything starts flowing. And for me as a coach, thinking about that when I was a kid was like an epiphany for me, because I was like, that is the way the body works. There is always that one problem that seems to trigger all the other ones. So instead of treating all those problems, maybe if we can come to the root cause of that issue and treat just this and let the body deal with the rest, then everything will start flowing naturally. So the key for me was this, is like, try not to overcoach, try not to fix every single problem, like basically methods versus principles. Try to find the underlying principle of that problem, fix an underlying principle, and every single consequence of the problem will just go away by themselves. And that has allowed me to see complex issues in very simple terms, because I am always looking for the underlying principle of the problem instead of focusing on each and every single symptom. And so that has been the key of my coaching, has been this. And so, but again, I go back to principles over method. It is the same way of thinking about it than everything else that I do.
Fantastic. Yeah, I know when I came over to work with you, you had me do one of the movements that you're famous for, which was the overhead yoke carry. And just to describe that to people, imagine holding a strongman yoke, but completely over your head in a jerk or snatch position, and then traversing across a parking lot with that swinging around. So you're stabilizing it, you're carrying that load. And I was, the overhead position's always been hard for me. I'd have problems with my shoulders. And I'd also found that when I used to squat, I always used to kind of kick out to one side. And when you videoed it for me, you said, it's my obliques. And so at first I didn't even know, you know, what to make of that, because I knew the obliques were those muscles that either the side you bend moves for. So when I looked at it, I'm like, oh my God, that's it. And then it suddenly occurred to me, and this will ring true, I'm sure, to a lot of the people out there. When you are one hand dominant, you normally carry most things with that hand. So when I started A, doing the programming that you suggested, but B, just trying to carry everything I picked up with the opposite hand, at first that opposite oblique was burning. And then as it built up and got stronger and stronger, the balance went back through that, as well as the other movements that I put in. But having that imbalance in your obliques, as well as your pelvic tilt, affected my entire body, all the way up from my shoulders, all the way down to my feet.
No, it did, yeah, because it changed your structure. That's the problem. First, we're always dominant on one side, so that means that side is already stronger. And because it's also a better coordination, we have a tendency to carry, do things mostly on that side. So now you're left with an entire weak side that has a structure that is already to start with far weaker. And so if you had like natural life on one side and, you know, a certain level of volume and fitness on the other, you end up having a structural problem. Whenever you have a structural problem, it will reflect on everything. So in your case, the problem was that side was so much weaker, you could not put any real weight on it. So you had to shift all the weight to your other side, your strong side. But that made you like have a weird spine position in order to create some kind of balance, because you wanted to go toward your strong side, not use your weak side. So you had to shift your spine a certain way to do that. And that particular position was a nightmare for your back, your hips, and everything, because it was nothing was aligned properly with good leverage. And so that's that overcompensation that wrecked you and that wrecks most people. It's not the first mistake that kills you, it's the second one. The first mistake is to have a weak oblique, but that's not really what's going to kill you at the end. What's going to kill you at the end is trying to use your other side too much. So that second mistake, that second overcompensation, that one is going to get you, because now you start to have a weird positioning and that accumulates through everything that you do. So you start very slowly with this, so it's barely perceptible. But if you do that over a long period enough of time, you're going to end up with a major problem, a major turn. So then you have people that can't carry without turning to one side, like, or collapse to one side. And now you have a real problem. Now you're creating a situation that can be traumatic for the body. But the problem is it's not obvious to fix, because it started so small and you build that over time. You just didn't realize you were doing it. That's how actually you boil a frog. Is how do you boil a frog to death? You put it in cold water and you raise the temperature very slowly. If you do that, the frog will stay in the water until it boils to death. If you were putting that frog in hot water, it would jump out. But because you put it in cold water and raised it very slowly and it got time to get used to the temperature going up, it will stay until it boils to death. And unfortunately, we are doing this ourselves a lot. As long as we do it slowly enough, we are willing to go through ridiculous amounts of discomfort on the body that can lead to actual trauma. And so I see a lot of people that just, you know, did not realize what was happening until years and years and years and years. And they come to me, and now there's a structural problem. So that requires a little bit more time. But what we had when you came around, basically, was an entire side that was collapsing under the weight. And so that created problems in other places, like your knee, your shoulder, whatever it was. And so if you came to me just to fix the shoulder, if I don't understand that there was a structural problem, I'm going to try to fix the shoulder, but not understanding that's not where the problem truly starts. So that was the thing of the keylog, is like, I need to see where the problem starts at the beginning, so that I don't end up trying to fix problems that are only consequences, only symptoms of the problem. And so many times the oblique, it's a very, very important muscle group, is responsible for people either squatting and turning or collapsing on one side. But it's a pyramid that I use, but you always have to look at the body through the structural first. Can your structure take the weight? Can you stabilize it? And then we can start to play with everything else. But so there are certain key parts that I look at when I look at movement. But the key is always to find that key log. And in your case, I knew it was the oblique because I could tell by the way you were collapsing under the weight on one side and trying to compensate on the other.
Absolutely. Yeah. And I sent you a video, what was it, about 2 months
ago?
So
much
now.
Better.
Yeah.
It was so much better.
Your initial yoke, I think, was 165, and that was 235 carrying it across with better form. So.
And very importantly, straight. Like you were not, torquing at the spine. You were not, that was actually good. Like I could tell, like, both lats were firing correctly, and you did that with 50% increase in weight. So I was very happy to see that video.
Yeah. I was happy to send it to you. It was amazing.
Yeah. No, because I don't know if you remember, but you saw the first video. Like I was worried about the pressure you were putting on your spine and your shoulder.
Yes. Yeah. No, it felt so unstable, and not the implement, yeah, but my body's way of dealing with the implement.
Yeah, your back did not look good when you did it the first time.
No, I learned a lot of things. So another one I want to touch on while we're still on the injury side is another area that I didn't realize was that bad till I started using some of your principles was anterior shoulder roll. Now, so many people have that, especially a lot of strong people. So you get a lot of guys that do a lot of bench and those kind of things, and you see those shoulders rolled over, but they say, oh, I can't do this lift because it's overhead. I can't do overhead. When I started working on the Z press and the landmine rows and some of those exercises that worked on my rear delts and my traps and my lats, and started pulling those shoulders back to the position they're supposed to be in, A, when I looked in the mirror, my shoulders were where they were supposed to be, like Da Vinci's original man painting. And then B, I had the Bruce Lee lats come back again, like you were saying, the Cobra. But
exactly.
Now I can, you know, the overhead stuff doesn't hurt. And that is a huge one. I'm sure in law enforcement, being in the car all day, but certainly with the firemen as well. And a lot of stuff we do is overhead, you know, passing things up there, pulling ceiling. So just by no rehab, and you see people doing the bands and the rotator cuff work, and it was just purely building up those muscles, you know, behind again.
The lats, I mean, it is such an important muscle, and it's a big one too. And go at the gym at home and start testing people, like as you were saying, you know, the Bruce Lee, like the Cobra lats. Okay, get people to engage that way. You will be amazed, not in a good way, on how many people cannot do this, cannot find their lats that way. It's because I've been at every seminar that I've done now, I've chosen a muscular female CrossFitter, and they cannot do the Cobra thing. They cannot widen their lats. They can only use their upper back. That is, and I cannot stress enough how important it is for that muscle to work to stabilize your shoulders. It is the structure of your shoulders are the lats in that sense, where they keep your shoulders down so you stop shrugging and being always in that unstable position. The lats are so important. And they are not being worked properly. Go at the gym, do lat pull downs. I put everybody on it now. The Chinese Olympic weightlifters do them. find your lats, and it's turning into a much bigger issue than even I thought it was. But so, yeah, I think the biggest difference you made on top of working your obliques was working those lats.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think if for everyone out there, if you think about how you are now, I know I'm sitting at a desk standing in front of this microphone. So my hamstrings are short because I'm in the seated position. You know, my shoulders are rolled forward. My focus is in front of me. So I think the same way that the body is so good at adapting in a positive way, sadly, it's so good at adapting in a negative way too. And if you're in this kind of fetal position long enough, after a while, the body decides, okay, that's what you want. Well, let's keep it. And now you're screwed, because when you were 2, you could sit in that perfect squat with your great hip mobility. Now you're 32 and you can't even squat down without going up on your heels or on your toes, excuse me.
Yeah. And if I ask you to flex your lats, you can't find them.
No, or your like, butt.
yeah. Imagine if I say flex your quads, you'd be like, yeah, well, obviously. Well, you can't. The glutes are the strongest muscle in the body, and the lats are the second biggest one. And you can't find any of those two. That you know what I mean? That is not a good idea.
Right. Now, moving on to the glutes then, so we'll kind of work our way around, because I'm trying to hit the main things that I'm sure the brothers and sisters out there would be suffering from. I think I talked about it before, I did that sled drag. So when I started doing the sled programming, I got myself a sled and sandbags, and I started doing it. At first, I felt very, very weak. But again, as I started doing the drags, I realized two things. Firstly, functionally, I was weak in the areas that I was actually required to do in my job. So pulling would be dragging someone out, and then pulling as far as having the harness on would be the same as dragging the hose, or dragging something towards the fire most likely. And then the uneven carry would be people, because I say to the guys I work with, people don't have handles. They are a most awkward object you could possibly get. They're a dead weight. You're normally clambering over furniture and God knows what to move people, whether it's in a fire or...
Yeah, and you can't grab them.
Yes. No. So that sled work was so important. I found a huge benefit, especially with the rope pull as well. The strength I got from that... I do jujitsu as well. I'm an absolute white belt. Terrible. I've just started. I got a 9-year-old that's been doing it 3 years. It keeps reminding me he's a higher belt. But when I do roll with the guys, I am known for my endurance and now my strength. And I never had the strength part before. But they're like, we can't get you to let go. And it's the rope pulls and the farmer's carries and all, you know, the sandbags with that raw grip strength. So I'm not in that pronated position that so many of us are all the time when we work with barbells and pull-ups.
Yeah, what that training does really is build your structure. The rope pull, the sandbag carries, the overhead yoke carry, really all that system, not the system, but all those exercises that I implement in that training is to build your structure. Can you put weight on your structure? So that's a yoke carry, overhead yoke carry. Can you do those basic movements that work your structure? The rope pull is the lats. So all those structural muscles in a way that has fairly low skill, so you can push the body hard in that sense, and that is fairly low eccentric, so that I don't beat up your joints and your muscle too much. And so you can get tremendous amounts of progress out of those, but without beating yourself up too much as well, which is very important because, like, for example, as you said, you're very active, you have a very demanding job, and then you do jujitsu on the side, and then you do CrossFit. So if you do certain movements that are hard on the joints, then you're going to pay for it at your job. And in your case, that can be a difference between life and death. So we can't have that either. So that's why I like those movements so much, because the low skill, low eccentric allows me to push the body very far, but without basically paying the price for it. So those are very, very important movements that I think in your profession, people would benefit of so much. And then way more than I would say like the snatch or movements like that. And as you've seen, for jiu-jitsu, it works.
Yeah, it certainly does. And the barbell movements, you're absolutely right. I mean, one of the big, just obvious epiphanies that I had when we started A, listening to you talk, and then B, doing the programming, was being so static in so many CrossFit movements, whether it's the deadlift, the clean, the jerk, the snatch, it's fantastic, but A, like you said, if it's high skill and you fail, now you have to drop the bar, now that intensity's gone. And then B, there's no left-right transfer of that weight across distance, and there's nothing we really do, and I'm sure in anyone listening in their job, that's standing still and the feet in exactly the same place,
yeah,
and then working
when
from there.
When do you have that much leverage and time? Yeah, you know I mean, like it's never, when do you have that much control of the implement? That implement is not awkward. There's nothing less awkward than a barbell. You have a perfect grip. You have the weight is perfectly situated over time. You have control of the whole thing. When was the last time you had control about a weight you lifted during your job? As you said, everything is awkward. Your left foot is in front. You're twisting halfway because you're trying to go around a table. You're trying to whack or lift somebody who's you're grabbing on one hand. It's life is awkward always, and there is no way a barbell prepares you for that kind of weird lifting. It might make you stronger overall, which would allow you to be stronger toward awkward movement. But I do believe there is a better way to do this. That if we talk about functional training, certainly all those movements are more functional than barbell ones. And they prepare you mentally for, like, if you ever had to lift someone in your arms and go down a flight of stairs, you understand what it's like to carry a sandbag. It feels horrible. It's sitting on your stomach. You can't breathe. Your arms are burning because you're in that awkward position, and yet you have to keep on plowing because otherwise you're going to die. So at that moment, you'll be happy you train on a sandbag instead of training with a barbell, because the barbell does not put you into that awkward thing, does not rest against your stomach, does not impede your breathing. You can be very pretty lifting a barbell, very, very clean, perfect movement and everything. Well, carrying someone out of a building on fire is not pretty. And you're not breathing right. And it's even carrying on your shoulder, one side of your body is screaming, your legs are burning. It's just welcome to life, man. It's not, the barbell won't prepare you for life.
Yeah. And I think that variable grip. So for everyone out there, pronated is how you would hold a barbell. How you would grip a pull-up bar with your palms facing away. And that's the majority of the movements that we do in CrossFit. And I think a lot of people do. But having that neutral grip, that supinated where your palms are facing towards you, and then not just keep grabbing a bar, but grabbing all different types of objects is key in the fire service, certainly, because all our things are different shapes. People, you have to have a good grip strength to carry someone down that flight of stairs. You have to have a good grip strength to ascend a 100-foot ladder up to a building, because God forbid if you let go, you have to have good grip strength to hold on to someone that you're trying to arrest or wrestle to the ground. So
yeah, and you don't grip something with a closed hand. In real life, everything you grab is open hand. Nothing is small enough to grab with a closed hand. Most things are open hand, and that's not the same kind of grip strength at all as a barbell. And again, like you were saying, it's not pronated. Most things you grab in life are in neutral. And so if you don't have, you need to work those, online radius, are the bones of the forearms. They cannot be locked into the same position always. You have to be able to train the muscle to allow them to move as they should. So it's a lot of different grip strength you have to work. Pronated, neutral and supinated, but as well close fist versus open hand grip. Those are not the same. Like, you can hook grip a barbell. You don't hook grip anything in nature. You know what I mean? So you have to work on a different kind of grips, on the different grab of hand position. All these contribute to things in life. But if you have a tendency to train only one thing, which is in that case pronated and hook grip, or at least close hand, that's what you're going to be good at. But now when you have to grab something supinated and open hand, oh man, you're going to die. And that's what the rope pull is for, is to make you work on that open grip supinated. But the first time you do it, you'll understand how hard it is. And you'll be thankful you did that at the gym in a controlled environment, instead of finding that the hard way on your job in a building on fire or catching someone.
Yeah, absolutely. And the irony as well is that the implements we've been talking about so far are very, very inexpensive. I know you guys sell the sandbags at StrongFit, and they're, either side of $70, is that right, for
a sandbag? Exactly, yeah.
And you get it shipped to you, you fill it full of sand. And then the sleds as well. I mean, obviously there's different ranges depending on what you want to do with them.
Yeah, but I mean, honestly, a sled, go to Home Depot, grab a wooden pallet, go grab a set of a chain, find a way to make a handle, and then you got a sled to drag in a parking lot for nothing, for $5.
Yeah, perfect. And then I'm sorry. And then the rope, we got 50 or 100 feet of inch and a half, 2 inch rope. Or I've actually used a fire hose. I use an old out of service fire hose for our one we have at the station. And then you see online in Julian's videos, but you're basically just bending over and dragging that thing towards you. So it's low skill, and your arms and lats will be screaming by the time you're done.
Yes, they will be. And all those will allow you to work in a different ways that what you can find in the gym. And it's just try the rope pull alone, and people will understand what I mean. Try it once, and you'll see how good of a movement that is. Like the overhead yoke carry and the rope pulls are by far my favorite movements.
Yeah, they're definitely some of the most humbling movements.
That too.
Yeah. So well, let's transition to that then as well. So the different energy systems, I know anyone that's done CrossFit for a while, and I know we keep reverting back to CrossFit, but it is, like you said, a great modality. I think a lot of people are familiar with it. And overall, I think it has huge benefits. It's just like anything, no system is perfect. But
No, and there is a fact that we since the games, we have a tendency to employ it the wrong way. I think CrossFit should be a Ferrari, and we're using it like a lawnmower. Like we saw the CrossFit games, and we're just taking that and making everybody do it. That was never truly the idea behind it. So yeah, I don't want to. Yeah, CrossFit can be done with great results if done correctly. That's all.
Yeah, actually, just to change tack for 1 second, I think you touched on this in your last live thing you did with Richard, but CrossFit has been amazing as well at redefining the sexes, because my gripe has always been in the fire service, there is some mentality about, X person in the fire service, whether it's female, whether it's whatever. And my thing has always been, you can either count or you can't. There's two types of firefighters, a good one and a crap one. So it's been amazing to see that gender redefined as well, and see these powerful, fit women be able to, you know, literally run circles around men. I mean, Sam Briggs is a perfect example. She's a firefighter in England and is the CrossFit Games champion. So, obviously that's one of the huge, huge positive things that's come out of that whole thing.
Oh, tremendously. I think we have trained women the wrong way, honestly, up until CrossFit. I think we train them a weaker, train them like weaker men, because women seems to respond much better to volume than it do pure intensity. So we've been loading them too much and not understanding how they work, like they work better with volume. The training system we had for them was not good enough. And so they did not trigger the results they should have. And so women were lagging behind, and people took that as, they can't do it. No, they can. They just have to be trained differently. There's a different way to train women than there is to train men. It's just women respond better to volume. That's just what it is. So, but that's what CrossFit really does, is humongous amount of volume at a certain intensity. And women, oh my goodness, have responded well to that. Like if you look now at the weights being used at the CrossFit Games, they probably would beat Miko Salo in 209 when he won. Like there's like 12 women that snatch over 200 pounds. And they do that with a six pack, not weighing that much, while being able to do like 20 strict pull-ups. Like the numbers that those women are capable of right now is just mind-boggling. It's amazing. And so it shows you that if you understand the principles, you can make up any method you want, basically. But that if you follow method without understanding the principle, you won't go anywhere. And that's exactly, I believe, what happened for training for women. It's just the principles upon which the decisions were made were wrong, and so the method didn't work. And here come CrossFit, who decided to do it differently, and women have just taken off on it. I mean, so now it's here to stay. Like, I do believe, like, the strength and conditioning community is missing a little bit, is not jumping on the train, because they look at the men who are not very strong. But the women, oh my God, the number they're using, they're missing. How are they not seeing that? Like, there's a probably like 30 women at the CrossFit again that squats over 315, that can deadlift over 350, that can bench press over 185. Those are good powerlifting numbers for women. And you're talking about women that don't even train for strength in that sense, for max strength, that do only Olympic lifting at the time, that are very good at gymnastics, that have a six pack, that can run a 5K. Like those are massive, massive numbers that we have to start paying attention to, because there's something happening there.
Yeah, absolutely. And I had someone, actually the creator of the Fire Sled, Rick. He said that's where some of these agencies should be looking to recruit.
Oh, you know, totally.
I mean, that makes perfect sense to me. You know, go to gyms regionals. In town. Yep.
Yeah, go to regionals. You can get half the field. Like those women at regionals, like train them for 3 weeks, they all pass the test.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, the tests we have now, and that's one of my my gripes too. I'm sure the law enforcement field is the same, but there's been a lowering of standards, and they blame it for getting more applicants in. But I think that's an extremely dangerous philosophy because, you know, the buildings haven't got any less dangerous, the ladders haven't got any lighter, you know, the felons that they're chasing aren't any nicer and how, you know, so you need to keep that standard and get people to rise up to it and not bring that standard down. And I think that's why, you know, the policemen that you see maybe 50 years ago looked in better shape than some of our brothers and sisters out there now. Because I know for the fire department where I am, it's a constant battle just to try and get, you know, exercise and nutrition, deeply implanted into the department, because it's easier just to say, oh, I won't, and then, you know, try and bring those levels down.
Yeah, no, that because I know they were talking about that for the military. How can it be? Like, you can tell women getting stronger by the year of the CrossFit Games, and yet this seems to, like, in the military they say, well, we had problem finding women who can do 5 pull-ups, whatever it was. I was like, where have you been looking? Because I can go to any CrossFit gym right now, I'll find you 10 women that can do 5 pull-ups. So, and if you go to regionals, you'll find 40 that can do 15. So they are there, basically. You guys, like let's introduce proper training done correctly. And trust me, we can get those tests much higher than they are right now.
Yeah, yeah, and I agree completely. I think it needs to bounce back up. I think
there's
so many things that have regressed the last few years. I mean, few decades, excuse me, the way people have been trained to eat, the way people have been trained to exercise. And I think there really is a paradigm shift in the way we're eating. I just went to my local farmer's market the other day, and it looks completely different than even 2 or 3 years ago. All this, you know, organic food everywhere now. So I think people... I've said this in one of my other podcasts, but people are sick and tired of being sick and tired, you know, and in pain.
Yeah, yeah.
So
it seems we're winning slowly, but we're winning. And me, I can tell because from all the seminars that I do, like, people are listening now. Like 5 years ago, everybody was, you know, slamming doors in my face. Now they're listening. They actually ask questions, and I get a lot of emails for people that want to do the same thing, that want to fix people. Yeah, I think like people realize that. Maybe just maybe being that unhealthy and in pain all the time is not normal.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Just look at how we were when we came on this planet, and look at cultures that haven't been affected by a lot of the negative Western influences. You know, you've got people that are 80, 90 still hinging in rice paddies and fields in these nations growing their food, you know, and yet a 30-year-old can't squat down and tie a shoelace, you know. So clearly it's not a human issue. It's the way that we are... existing in 2016.
Yeah, and I think honestly, sometimes I think for the food is even worse than the exercise, because exercise is, if you can't do it, you know, it's almost like an immediate feedback. With the food, everything takes longer and everything, and people have emotional connection to food and are in denial when it comes to stuff like that. Like the fact that some people do stomach surgery because they can't stop eating a certain things, to me, is the most insane idea ever.
Yeah, I mean, it is completely. And then the crazy thing, and I was talking to Joel Salatin about this, is that it's so deeply ingrained that if you talk to people about growing your own food and not using chemicals, you're almost viewed as a hippie.
Oh, totally.
It's like, this is what the entire human race did till about 40 years ago. And
if you're talking about having something in your garden, they'll look at you funny.
Yeah. And that's the answer. That's again, as simple as what we've talked about today, the answer for wellness, the cure for most of the diseases that we're seeing, if they're not some sort of genetic defect, is purely diet-based, and then obviously exercise as well. And just selling that basic concept, the principle instead of the method, would cure so much disease in this country.
Yeah, and they would learn to do it themselves as well. Like, they rely on... companies way too much. They rely on programs to tell them what to do, on programs to tell them what to eat and how much of it. And then they go to the market, which, and then you rely on them to tell them that it was grown organically or not, or stuff like that. Just at some point, do some of it yourself. Just go get smarter, or go find out if what they say is true. You have an organic farmer, just one time, take a trip to the guy's farm. See if he's doing it the way he says he's doing it. And then maybe you learn something on the way. Go there and then, I don't know, learn to cook with him or something. Grow something in you. Just start to take a little bit of control of your own life instead of relying always on people giving you stuff. Learn how to fish just once in a while. Instead of asking people to give you a fish, go learn how to fish. Like, just, it will put your mind in a better place anyway. You'll understand how the system works. And maybe you won't take every single thing they tell you for granted.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think by doing that as well, you there's a couple of things. Firstly, you get in touch with nature, and you get your face out of your computer or your tablet or your phone. And then secondly, I think something that's lost in our society at the moment is patience. So say you do plant a little tiny garden in the corner of your yard. That's not instant gratification. You're actually going to have to be patient, and you're going to have to tend to it and wait for it to grow and wait for it to mature. But then, you know, when you do enjoy the fruits of your labor, you're going to feel a completely different connection with that food than when you just went into, you know, Chick-fil-A and bought a thing of fries, for example.
Yeah, and you'll understand it takes time. Because that's the biggest thing, is people come to me and they're in pain, and so I establish what needs to be done. And they're like, how long is it going to take? And my answer is always the same: as long as it takes. That's it. There's no other answer than this. It will take as long as it takes to fix you. But, I mean, it took you a certain amount of time to mess yourself up that bad. What do you think this is? If I have a magic pill, I'd be living on a desert island somewhere, come here once a year, sell it for $1 million and go back. You know what I mean? Like, how long does it take? As long as it takes. People have the wrong time frame now in mind. When it comes to nutrition, when it comes to exercise, they just look at it as that very, very short time frame. And that is not the way it works.
No, absolutely not. And I think, again, it's like we talked about before, it's knowing your why. If you have a why,
yes,
then it does take as long as it takes, because, you know, damn it, by the end of it, you're going to get to that point, whether it's, you know, being able to surf a wave that you've always wanted to surf, or play with your kid, or, you know, whatever it is. But if you're just working on, I want to lose X amount of pounds, or I want to have this very short, not very tangible feedback, you're just setting yourself up for failure. And I think, you know, getting out of pain is a great one. So saying getting out of pain is the first part, but what do you want to do when you're out of pain? Do you want to be able to do a tennis serve that you used to be able to do, or... And having that as your goal, that will keep you going back to the gym. That will make you make better choices in your nutrition.
Yeah, because getting out of pain, actually, I can tell you from my side, is not enough. You would think that would be enough to get people to change certain things. Unfortunately, it's not. Like, they even getting out of pain, that works for a certain amount of time, but they end up doing the bare minimum. And I'm like, that the bare minimum does not work. Like, what usually gets people going, like, the best why I've seen is people that told me, I want to be around to play soccer with my kids. That's been the one. Like, things like very, and usually selfless, you know, in that sense of, I want to do it for my family. I want to do it for my kids. I want to do it to be around for my grandkids. Those are the kind of whys where you can tell people are going to put the work in and really do real change. People that come and that say, oh, I just want to feel a bit better because my back is spasming, or you know, I need to lose 20 pounds, those ones never make it. What matters is the why. Is why you do this. And a vanity will never take you very far, that's for sure. But like, just like, oh, I don't want to be in pain anymore. That's, unfortunately, it's crazy, but it doesn't seem to be, even that doesn't seem to be enough. People need a stronger reason, and usually a selfless one, to really get change going. That's what you see with truly obese people that lost like 300 pounds. It's just one day they got scared. And they had an epiphany, and they go, oh my God, I'm going to die and not see my kids. And that's when they really do the change. You know what I mean? But that idea, like, I need to look better in the mirror, that won't work.
No, and I think that's what inspires people when they do walk into, you know, whatever kind of... forward-thinking exercise space, whether it's, you know, CrossFit, or whether it's something like a functional movement, like a gymnastics-based gym, is when you walk in, you see a 50, 60-year-old man doing, you know, clean, slow strict muscle ups into, you know, some sort of back lever or whatever the move would be, or you see someone climbing a rope without using their feet, or walking across the floor with a handstand. I think that inspires people. But you know, you walk around, how many regular gyms you walk around, and there's young people that probably got six packs. But does that really inspire you? No. But when your body starts to move in a way that you've never been able to before. I can do things now at 42 that I couldn't do at 18. It's so many.
Yeah,
more.
Same here. Yep. Yeah.
So I think that is, you know, so inspiring. And there's a phrase that I say to firemen that I'm trying to, I guess, inspire. There's one that says, "Would you want you saving you?" And I think a better way of looking at it, again, removing yourself from the equation, is how would you feel if someone died because you hadn't trained? So yeah. Then putting other people's lives back in that balance where it should be the whole time, and reminding yourself, you know, when you're getting tired, or, you know, you don't want to go work out, or you want to choose the crappy food, someone's life might depend on me, and that driving you.
In your field, there's no question. Like, the responsibility is past you. There's no question there. But that this is really the conversation, because we can talk about food and training all day, and I can tell you what to do and how to fix the back or the shoulder and stuff like that. But at the end, it starts there. That's just, if you cannot answer that question about your why, I can't help you. And that's a conversation I had with most people, because they say, okay, when the conversation starts to go, how long does it take? And they have those keywords. I'm like, ooh, we need to backtrack, and we need to talk about exactly what is it you're looking for. Because if you're looking for, that's why I much rather train people that are in pain, or, you know, that are breaking more than athletes, because athletes just want to get that next competition and everything. That doesn't lead them anywhere. The key is you have to define your why, and there is nothing more important than that. But like, not a why, like, I want to lose 10 pounds, like a true why. Like, you have to have that core reason to go that hard and to go do that work, because it's gonna take some work, that's for sure. And so that why, to me, is everything. Without the why, you'll never go anywhere.
Absolutely. I actually gave a "What is your why" speech at the gym yesterday, funnily enough.
Yes.
And the reason I was doing that is I'd seen, again, when we first had the gym owner, Ted, has done really well. He started off in a small warehouse space, and he's expanded and is a very successful gym. But back when it was bare bones, you saw a lot more, like we were saying, when you were done with the intense anaerobic threshold type workout, people lying, gasping for air. And I think that's very important to have those kind of workouts, whatever style you want to choose, but something that puts you to that point, whether it's a sled push or a Metcon, because that's where you get that mental toughness, and that's where you go to that place where you think you can't go anymore. And I know you're famous for this, and then you get pushed. And I say to people, you should leave the gym 101% stronger than when you came in. So that 1% that you thought you couldn't go past, if that adds up every day, now you're in a life or death situation. You know, that's how these people lift those cars off those kids and that kind of thing, because there's so much capacity. But if you believe that humans are built like China dolls, you're never going to get that mental strength and toughness to push through some of these things.
Yeah, and I would like to see honestly coaches give that speech almost every day. I think we can win that battle with people, but it will require us to educate people, and more than just giving them knowledge. We have to communicate that message. Like, make them find the why. And I think we do that by every single session spending 5 minutes and explaining the importance of the why. I think that's part of our job as coaches, is to go out there and every session explain the importance of the why and how they should do it, and just spend, we need to spend the time educating people on that. And every single session said, you need your why. You need, today I'm going to need to go push past what you think you can do. And I think we can, that's where the change starts, is with us coaches spending that time explaining the why to people and why it matters that they find it.
Yeah. Yeah. Because I know that you shouldn't be hitting that kind of intensity every single session. You want to have those slower ones as well, the ones with very strict movement, accessory work. But we have seen a lot recently of people finishing whatever Metcon or whatever style exercise they've done, and before the barbells barely hit the ground, they're already stripping their weights and getting ready to go. So there's a lack of that camaraderie of cheering everyone else on and helping them get to that 101%. And then also, if you can jump up after any sort of exercise and start skipping to the weight rack, something's wrong.
Yeah, you didn't train. There's no way you've done a hard CrossFit workout and start cleaning up right away.
Yeah. Yeah, so, and I know, just to kind of go back to one of your movements, you have a prowler push that takes people to that point.
Oh, yeah. That's my favorite right there. Like, that's when I want to push people mentally. Because the prowler push has no weight bearing, no eccentric, no skill. So you absolutely have no reason for stopping. So you stop whenever you quit mentally. That's it. There's no skill. You can always take two more steps. There's no eccentric, so you won't beat up the next day. There's no weight bearing, so your joints will be fine. So when you come back the next day, you know you could have gone harder. And so if I make you do this week in, week out, within a few months, you'll be able to create a tremendous amount of intensity in your training. And there is no going around the benefits of intensity. Mentally, forget physically, even just the mental aspect of it, you will be so much tougher because you'll understand that discomfort is not pain. There's a difference.
Yeah, exactly. And I think the rest of our life is so comfortable. I remember listening to someone talking about, you know, we have air conditioning and we have couches and we have beds with covers on and a roof over our head when it rains and all these things. So you have to work extra hard, on the whole, you know, muscle balance side because of your sitting and that kind of thing. But B, on if you're in any sort of field where you need to have that mental toughness, I mean, everyone should have it really, but certainly tactical athletes, you have to push yourself hard, you know, regularly, because when it hits the fan, I mean, like you said, it truly is life or death, whether it's you and your partner getting out or whether it's you getting to someone that needs to be rescued. And that extra bit, you know, that might be what it took to get to that person. So you literally might have saved a life from that training alone.
And you need to train for it. Like, most people think adrenaline will take them there and they'll be fine. And no, there are certain physical components where you need to train for your body to be able to handle it. People don't understand what the prowler does. When you truly go into the state of shock, because you push the body hard enough, like if you don't train for it, you will not move for 20 minutes. It is far beyond what people think. That's why too is people get so comfortable, they forget what true discomfort can feel like, how soul crushing, how strong the reaction of the body against that can be. So they always think like, oh, in the right circumstances with the adrenaline, I'll be able to go past it. No, no, you won't. No, you won't. Once you go anaerobic threshold, you're done. You cannot do anything. You'll die before you move. You know what I mean? And so you need to be able to train it so you can push that level at which your body will quit further, so that you never find that level in your job as a tactical officer, because otherwise you're in serious, serious trouble. It can be far rougher than people think it is, because they got soft, they don't go there anymore, so they forget how hard it can be.
Yeah, they say, I think there's, I'm paraphrasing now, but there's some phrase, so you sweat on the drill ground so you don't bleed on the battleground. I think that philosophy is absolutely right.
Yeah, there is no question. Look, the like all armies have known that since the birth of time, you know, and I mean, and just being comfortable all the time is great, but it's mentally, it's not always a good thing. And so, as you were saying, I think we need to push even harder on a regular basis to compensate for that.
Yeah, I think it's even more important for the fire department, because once we make entry to a building, the bottle on our back carries every last shred of air that we have. So if you are panicking, if you're not mentally tough, if you're not conditioned, you literally have half of that air because you've already blown off half just, you know, going in. And that's it. Once that's gone, you're done. So that, again, dictates whether you walk out without ever making a rescue. Or I interviewed Mitch Dreyer, who was a fireman that got trapped in a fire. And by him checking his pack, that saved his life while his friends were digging him out.
Yeah, and also being mentally clear-minded while being tired. That for you guys, that's paramount. Like, if you don't train and you get into that anaerobic threshold, your brain is gone. Like, you can't think straight. And there are situations in your job where you need to think straight, even though you're excessively tired. You can train for that. By training those ridiculous workouts that I have, your brain will be able to go into it going like, okay, this is bad, but I've been there before, I can handle this. You can stay a little bit clearer mentally. And even that little bit can be the difference between life and death, between making the right decision and the wrong decision. So it is very, very important, just not just for the physical aspect, to go there on a regular basis. You need to train for all this. It will impact your life in many, many ways.
Yeah, absolutely. And I'm sure the clear thinking is especially important for the law enforcement guys. If they've just had a chase and all of a sudden they're in a situation where they might have to draw their weapon in a split second. So.
But plus, I know them for fighting in MMA. Like when you're exhausted, you make stupid tactical mistakes. Like I've in jiu-jitsu, like when you push far enough, when you're exhausted, the white belt will whoop your ass just because you can't move correctly anymore. You make stupid mistakes because you're just exhausted as much mentally as you are physically. Like you trained for it. Like you, even exhausted, the black belt should not be destroyed by a white belt. I mean, because you should be able at least to stall. But mentally, you give up.
Yeah, yeah. And that's exactly it. I mean, we have the potential to tap out very easily, you know, mentally, if we're not testing ourselves all the time.
Yeah. Yeah, I saw it in jiu-jitsu all the time. When you're exhausted, you want to quit right away. It doesn't matter what the guy does. I've seen guys quitting even without being in a lock because they just completely gave up mentally. You know what I mean? And they were just freaking out. That's a mental approach to it, because I can't remember who said that, but it was a Navy SEAL, I think, saying when you're completely exhausted and you think you've given everything, you got 60% left. or something like that. So I've seen it on the jiu-jitsu many times where guys just quit, and I was like, no way, there's no way. You didn't need to quit. You could have just relaxed. And yeah, I mean, that was you quit mentally way before you quit physically. And in your job, if you quit mentally, oh boy, are you in trouble.
Yeah, exactly. And it goes back to the why again. I mean, if you have that strong why while you're training, it will push you through, because you won't have that choice in the real situation. There won't be any walking out. I mean, we do evolution sometimes, and you know, guys will want to stop two-thirds of the way in. They're like, well, technically you're in a burning building. You can't take your gear off. You can't remove your
mask. Guess what? Yeah.
Yeah. So
exactly.
Yeah. All right. Well, I'm going to steer it around a little bit. I have had so much flack by my refusal to wear shoes as much as possible. I have to wear them when I'm coaching, but I try and wear them as little as possible. And I know you're a fan of not wearing shoes too. So tell me a little background behind that.
Well, honestly, a lot of it at first was like I was tired of putting shoes in, you know, in and out, like, because I would go upstairs in my gym and everything. At some point, I said screw it, so I didn't put any shoes. And then I have very flat feet, and I realized that over time, my feet, it took a while, don't get me wrong, but my feet were getting stronger. I was able to get the muscles of my feet working better. Feet seems to be something that people don't think about much, but those muscles are not very big and needs to be worked a certain way. And with the shoes, the way they are designed now is so cushy. Like you have absolutely no control with the ground. It's like, it's the same reason for me that I don't wear gloves when I train. You have proprioceptors in your hand. Like, for example, on the outside of the hand, if you press really hard, you'll notice your tricep activate. That's actually an evolutionary trait. It's because when you press hard enough on the outside of your hand, that means you're pushing something. So it triggers your tricep to activate harder. So if I wear gloves and I lessen the amount of pressure the outside of my palm is feeling, I'm not going to be able to activate my triceps correctly. So that's why I don't wear gloves when I train. It was the same thing for my feet. There are certain pressure points on my feet that I want to activate to make sure my glutes, for example, or certain parts move correctly. And so I think the softness of the heels, for example, does not allow that full contact of the bone and does not trigger the glutes as strongly as they should. Or it's things like this. So me, not wearing shoes was a matter of moving to me, it makes sense that it would help me move the way I'm supposed to move.
Yeah, because I've gone barefoot a lot in my life. I mean, when I'm at home, I'm always barefoot in the yard, kicking around the football. And
I'm barefoot right now.
Yeah, me too. But I've never had the issues with the fallen arches or anything like that. And someone described it to me perfectly. I mean, whether you believe, you know, the Darwinian evolution theory, or if you I do as well, but you look at the anatomical side as well, the bottom line is your feet are extension of your hands, and so they're built to grip and balance, and that proprioception is giving you feedback all the time. And you look at the I guess devolution again of shoes as the running got more and more popular, And then before you know it, you've got like half a foot of sponge beneath you, and you've lost complete contact. And you're higher up, so it's easier to roll an ankle too. But as soon as I went to the minimalist shoes or bare feet, and I do all the yoke carries and farmer's carries in the gym with bare feet, I felt so much more connected with that whole movement. And you take a step back and, well, why wouldn't you? Again, as a species, we've been barefoot until very, very recently.
Yeah, that's the thing. You're supposed to be barefoot. You're not supposed to have shoes. When was the last time humanity had shoes? I mean, outside the last 100 years. So that idea that, oh, you're not wearing shoes. No. It's weird that you are wearing shoes. I mean, like, yeah. And if you don't believe in Darwinian evolution, I can't help you. So I had that at the last seminar. I had the guy, he's a friend, actually. But when I was making a joke saying, who doesn't believe in evolution? Jesting, and he actually raised his hand. I was like, oh, Jesus Christ. You don't be. So let's assume that, you know, evolution is correct for a second. And walking around barefoot is a normal way. Like, those bones have to touch the ground. If they don't feel contact, certain things are not firing correctly. That's just the way it is. Like, even when you grip, it's the same thing. Try with your hands. Apply pressure on certain parts of your palm, and you notice certain muscle activating harder.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think again, it goes back to what we were saying earlier about gripping too. You know, when you're in one position, what happens to your hands and your forearms? They get this huge imbalance. Well, it's the same with the feet. You know, if you have shoes on all the time, and obviously there's situations where you have to. I try and get the lightest, most minimalist shoes for work. They try and make out that we need to have these, you know, steel encompassed diving boots practically in case we ever step on a nail. But the reality is we have the EMS side where we're dealing with medical calls in normal areas. And then we have our fire gear for if you're going to be somewhere that may have the potential of hurting you. But that's, you know, for a short time until that's over and then you take it off and go back. But I think they've kind of gone overkill in the steel-toed, steel shank, you know, this and that. And I think the possibility of stepping on a nail once versus 30 years of wearing the wrong stuff on your feet is a bit of an unbalanced concept.
Yeah, and again, like, if you're going to rush into a building and everything, of course wear boots. But that's, I'm guessing you don't do that 10 hours a day. So, yeah, there are certain occasions, of course, when you choose, but others, like at home, for example, like we are right now, just walk barefoot. Your feet will thank you, and you'll be surprised how it affects balance and glute activation and stuff like that.
Yeah, absolutely. All right, and then there's one more concept of yours I want to touch on, and then we'll do some short questions and let you get on with your evening. But burn the questions. I love that one too.
Yeah, that was from it was Heidegger or Schopenhauer. It was Heidegger, I think. They asked me during the barbell shrug, and they were asking me what I think when I'm about to do those parallel sprints. So I have one set left. I mean, you're dying, but you still have one more. Why do I think right before I go? And I told them I don't. I don't think about anything. I'm at a stage where I know why I'm doing this. I know at the end of that parking lot is a better version of myself. I know that once I get to the other side, I'm going to be in a humongous amount of pain. I'm going to cramp everywhere. But because I know this, I am able to forge my soul a little bit more. I'm able to be a better version of myself on the other side. That stress will make me a little bit better. And so I'm at a stage when I'm ready to go. I don't think about that I need to do it. I get to the point where I just do it. And so I was using that quote when I say burn the questions, like burn everything, burn your doubts, burn who you think you are, burn everything. Take that sled, go on the other side of the parking lot. You will be a better human being just out of doing that. But to get to that stage, you need to burn the question. You need to stop overthinking all that stuff, all those reasons. Just burn the questions.
Yeah.
You'll be better.
Yeah, I think that's a great philosophy. All right, I got a couple of quick questions. First one, you went on the world, well, you're on the world tour, really. So, what's yep. Any favorite countries so far?
I have to say, for coffee, it was East London.
Oh, really?
They have the best coffee ever. Like, there was a coffee shop every block that had just awesome coffee everywhere. So I enjoyed my time there very much. I love coffee, so I enjoyed my time there very much. But a place I really like also was Holland. We were in Utrecht, CrossFit and Scared. And I have to say, I love that city. Probably because I love people from Holland. The Netherlands were awesome, and people are very humble, very polite. They all speak perfect English. I really, really enjoyed my time over there. I love those people.
Yeah. It looked like it was an amazing tour, and it's something that I preach to everyone. Is I think the first year of our education here in the college level should be a year traveling the world and actually seeing these countries and these cultures for yourself, and then realizing that a lot of what you've been told is maybe not as accurate as you thought.
Yeah, it's not nearly. It's not what you think. That's for sure. But I mean, I loved all the countries, but just there were some. Life is a collection of moments. And we had some good moments. We visited a lot of beautiful places. Overall, it was like we were in Sintra in Portugal. That was just a gorgeous city. We had like awesome moments.
Okay, now I know you have a book club now. You recommend books on your site. Do you have?
I know, it's so weird.
Do you have a favorite book though? Like one you recommend to people listening now?
Yeah, the first one was because it was about all that. Like scientific mindset when it comes to training of nutrition, like principles of your method is so important. And that's understanding the principles like that is something that scientists do obviously for their line of work. But the one that do it the most, I guess, were the people for quantum mechanics, because a lot of the things cannot be tested because the distances are too small. So they have to rely on principles and advanced mathematics. And so there was a very, very interesting book called A Black Hole War by Leonard Susskind. It was a battle between him and Stephen Hawking about information and entropy and things like that. But it's explained in very, very simple terms that anybody can read that book. Anybody will understand that book, even though it's about quantum mechanics. But it will give, I believe, it shows what it takes to progress and to how to look at problems through principles and the logical aspect that is needed to move things forward and everything. So I found that book to be fascinating. It's called The Black Hole War by Leonard Susskind.
Okay, brilliant.
It shows you the universe in an aspect where that you realize you really don't know that much.
I already know that. But all right, so I'll put that link of that in the show notes. And then what about a movie or documentary? You got a favorite?
A movie or documentary? I mean, there's always many, many movies. A documentary right now. I watch a lot of stuff on YouTube because there's a lot of lectures from like great people that you can find on YouTube. I don't have especially one right now that strikes me as crazy, but I have a tendency to watch a lot of lectures. There's some very, very, very smart people, and it's crazy. Most of that stuff is for free on the internet, on YouTube, like this, for people to just have access to it. I always wonder at the internet, man.
Yeah, it's a wealth of information if you just start down that path, that's for sure. And then when you need a laugh, when you need to decompress, what do you do?
Usually I play with my daughter.
Yeah, that seems to be a common one. I do the same thing. It's amazing the joy children bring to most people.
Yeah. I mean, not all the time, but yeah, most of the time, yeah.
All right, so we're going to wrap it up, but where can people find you? Obviously, I know you've got your strongfit.com website, and you're also the movement coach. Is that your technical title at CrossFit Invictus?
Yeah, the movement specialist, but I'm the movement coach. I'm on Instagram at strongfit1.
Okay, fantastic.
If people would find me, and then on Facebook at Julian Strongfit Pino, but you'll find me on Instagram at Strongfit1.
Okay, and then you have a lot of videos on YouTube as well, don't you?
On the Strongfit channel as well.
Okay, so I recommend everyone look at those, the sled movements that we're talking about, the overhead yoke, Z-press, all those are amazing, and you could pretty much start doing them today with stuff that you have probably very close to you. And then is your programming on CrossFit Invictus' site, is that correct?
Yeah, that's a template that I use. It's on the Invictus website right now. It's called a Strongman program. It's not a Strongman program. It's really my template to balance, but we had to find a name. And so it's listed under the Strongman program.
Okay. So if you subscribe to any of the Invictus programs. Julian's, well, the performance one is on there, I believe. Yep. But the I did the strongman one, and was it $29, I believe? Is that right?
I believe so, yeah.
Yeah, and that will give you, you know, a great start of how to program this and, you know, get you on your way. So, all right, well, Julian, thank you so much.
My pleasure.
Your knowledge is going to be coming from a completely different angle, I'm pretty sure, than most people. I was in this industry for a long time before I came across your work, and it blew me away. So thank you so much.
Always happy to talk to you. It's been a while.
It has, and I'd love to do a part two. I'm going to get my rear end on a plane and come out there again. And you couldn't get me to puke last time because I'd had a migraine that day, and I'd already thrown up all over my old fire station. So, but I'll bring some gastric juices for next time.
Cool. And and then I hope we'll be able to help the community, firemen, police, all that stuff. I know, like, it's a bit closed by necessity, but I hope we can introduce some new ideas about training and things like that, so we can help the guys.
Absolutely. Well, I'm sure that there's, you know, a huge amount of seeds being planted after this, and hopefully people will come dive into your work and then run with it.
That would make me happy.
It will make me happy too. All right. Well, thank you so much for taking your time. I appreciate you reaching out to our community and wanting to help.
My pleasure. Okay. Talk to you soon, James.
Thank you.
Bye.
Bye.